Dana read that account from the book of Acts about that city called Joppa. Joppa in the ancient world was a very important place because it was along a trade route that gave it strategic value. It also meant it became a kind of a target so that various empires would fight over that part of the world, the Syrians and the Babylonians. And by the time of Jesus, it was the Romans who were competing for advantage in that spot. And that competition was costly. It was bloody. Sestus Gallus sent in troops and in one day killed 8,400 people. Now, in a city in the ancient world, that's a huge swath of the population. Josephus was one of those ancient historians, and he wrote of some of those battles this: "And thus Joppa was taken twice by the Romans in a little time, but Vespasian, in order to prevent these pirates from coming thither," and that's a cool word, "thither anymore, they erected a camp there where the citadel of Joppa had been and left a body of horses in it with a few footmen. So these troops overran the country as they were ordered to do, and every day cut to pieces and laid desolate the whole region." This awful, wonderful place was among the very first where the gospel of Jesus was preached. Imagine, the very first of places where God's good news of love and purpose in this one Jesus, this good news of Jesus that would prevail over a culture of conquest, a culture of death. Now, it's likely that in this little place, this little Joppa, there would have been two Christian communities that existed there side by side. One of them devoted to the old world. One of them devoted to that sort of Hebrew way, the tradition of faith that moored and anchored in the ancient Israel's temple and liturgy. Those folks would have spoken Aramaic. They would have remembered the temple festivals and the calendar and the passages of the Torah. Well, scholars think and wonder that if right next door would have lived another Christian community, this one with a wholly different kind of backdrop, a different crowd, less attached to the old Jewish orders, less aware of circumcision and Passover and slavery in Egypt. These folks weren't Aramaic Hebrews, they were Greek-speaking Hellenists. Well, why does that matter? They had been converted from Mithraism, from Caesar worship. It's clear from Luke's version of the Acts text that there was a woman who lived there, who worked and shared and served and believed and collaborated with both of them. Both these kind of old Hebrew Christians and these newfangled Greek ones. We know that because, well, what were her names again? Dorcas and Tabitha. An old Aramaic word and a Greek word. Was she a kind of a bridge? Could she travel between them and among them? Was she one of those who was a hero in both camps? Maybe one who could speak both languages. At one point, this beloved sister dies, and they have, I don't know, a memorial service, maybe something like the memorial services that we have, where friends gather, and family gathers, and they display things that were of value in her life. When we have a memorial service, what do you put out on the display table? The family album, right? If you've been around here, you know. Usually, you know, if somebody won a trophy along the way, there'll be a trophy there or somebody's favorite hat. What did they brag about Dorcas? What did they display from Tabitha's life and legacy? They bragged about the most important thing of all, the thing that she did most well, the things that she made. She dressed the rich and the poor. She dressed the insiders and the outside, the powerful and the marginalized. Now, it's probably worth remembering that, have you got one of these in your pocket? I bet if I flipped around and got to Amazon, I could get a new pair of shoes delivered to my house, sitting at my door, and they could be there before I got home. Right? And you could too. For us, clothing has become, you know, one of those commodities that is so easily accessed. We almost think of clothes as disposable. Not so in Dorcas' day. She would have committed hours and days to the craft of making garments. There's a few more that we have images of from back in the day. They look kind of like tattered rags now. They are, after all, nearly 2,000 years old, and these would have been the finest things made then, but we even have ancient underwear, see? But you can imagine the toil and the expertise, the kind of commitment it would have required to fashion these things, intended to last not weeks or months, but a lifetime. Things that would have been prized and intimate and careful for each and every one. This Dorcas, this Tabitha, had dedicated her life to following the example of Jesus. A life full of good works. A life full of care for the poor. In fact, she's the very first woman in the whole of the Bible to be called a disciple. Dorcas. A hard life, a whole life, a good life. But now she's gone. Now she's died. And one wonders if the two camps started to worry. You know, who's going to hold us together? She was great. She was the bridge. She was the one who made us, you know, cooperate. And now she's gone. Who will bridge these polarized peoples? You know, those who were the red shirts and those who were the blue shirts. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know what I mean? Who's going to hold us? Who's going to keep us? Those who were the conservers of the tradition and now all those iconoclastic progressives. What are we going to do? What are we going to do without her? God seems to have a solution to those human divisions. And it's not just being nice. God seems to have a solution to all of that tension between those communities, and it's not about just ignoring the differences. God seems to have a solution to the inherent conflict between those two different and colliding worldviews, and it's not just about pretending. What's God's solution? Resurrection. Jesus' way is in Peter. And Peter says what? Tabitha, get up. Rise. Now, it's interesting. The word there is anesthetai. I don't know if you know this. Or is that Aramaic or is that Greek? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It's Greek. And where's Peter from? He's not a Greek. That old Jew Peter is speaking Greek to get a woman to rise from the dead who has two names. Do you see what's happening? There is new resurrection, new life in this community that otherwise would never have made it. Let me show you another dork. You might have seen this one before. Her name isn't Greek. Her name isn't Aramaic. It's just Peg. Peg. Not Margaret, not even Peggy. That would have been far too formal, far too high-minded. Just Peg. The only time she didn't have a cigarette in her mouth was when she was sleeping. Peg. Peg knew the taste of alcohol and the sound of four hungry kids. Her husband drove a bus for a living. She worked at Brocklands in downtown Seattle till she died after having spent 50 years there. Peg made clothes. She made clothes for kids and for weddings and for stage shows. Peg, she made costumes for Halloween and even for the opera. Customers came to the shop asking for formal tuxedos and evening dresses and ball gowns, for get-ups that they could wear to parties where they could play act like characters they'd seen on Bonanza or on Gilligan's Island. At Peg's funeral, the crowd was small. There was some family and a few friends, but there were no samples of her sewing, her expertise, no samples of her clothier's craft or textile magic. Peg was my grandmother, and in her death, she brought together a family that didn't always get along with each other, that still doesn't agree with each other. In her death, she brought together a family who otherwise would have had no reason to do so. She was imperfect and impious. Peg was uneducated and underappreciated, but beloved of God. She never made much money. She never had any status, and she wasn't remembered because of any particular notable achievement. Peter the old Jew said to Tabitha, the Greek, "Get up. Get up. Awaken, stand, and live." Can you hear your own name called? Debbie, get up. Jim, get up. Pam, get up. Dennis, get up. Just at a time when a lot of us want to make Christianity into kind of a system of self-improvement, we want to make the Bible into some means for a way to amend our lives, see to it that we evolve to become better parents or better managers or money or, you know, make better decisions. Just about the time we think that it's all about character and, well, me making good habits and showing up at church more often, we remember again that it's not that at all. It's far better than that, that God's deep longing is to raise us from the dead. So we show up today with our own imperfect lives, our own stupid mistakes. We show up again today with our own missed opportunities and petty failures and secret shames, not for a tune-up, but to be raised from the dead. Becky and Marilyn, Jim and Chris and Dick and Marco, Arlene and Mike and Bob. Shall I go on? Do you get the point? Say with me, anesthetai. Anesthetai, rise.